Imagine for a moment 600 bandits hiding out in the Forest of Dean. You would know about it, wouldn't you? I mean, nobody does anything without everybody knowing in the Forest of Dean. You would know if there were 600 bandits tucked out, I don't know, somewhere near Elwood. That's not a comment on our friends from Elwood. Or they're up on the hill above Sudley, or maybe down by Park End. You would know if there were 600 bandits living in the Forest of Dean. Well, here in 1 Samuel in chapter 23, we find ourselves in a similar kind of situation. 600 bandits. David and his outcast band. And just as for 600 bandits to live in the forest around here, there would need to be a kind of a degree of complicity from the local population. They would know about it. And to feed so many, there would have to be some kind of interaction with the local people. The relationship with the local inhabitants would be very important. And so we find here in this chapter, David has run from the inhabitants of Keilah who were willing to betray him when Saul came to attack. And so, verse 13 tells us, David and his men, about 600 in number, left Keilah and kept moving from place to place. And then we're told David stayed in the desert strongholds and in the hills of the desert of Ziph. He's out in the wilderness. And we have this deadly game of hide and seek going on. Day after day, Saul searched for him. But God did not give David into his hands. This terrible game of cat and mouse. Day after day, David has Saul searching for him. And yet David keeps escaping. And the question is how? Is it just luck? Is it his superior skills as a general? No. The passage tells us how it is. God did not give David into his hands. Forget crossing your fingers. Forget rabbit's foot on your keyring. Forget a touching wood. Forget your horoscope. All those things deny a deep spiritual reality. God is in control. God did not give David into his hands. And then we read on and we find that David is going to be betrayed by the Ziphites, by the people of Ziph. If you want to know how David felt about that, you could go away at home and read Psalm 54, which is composed when David is told the Ziphites are going to betray him. And they go to Saul and they say, "We're going to give you David." And now Saul has got fresh intelligence. Saul's man in Clement's End is going to take them to him. Saul has got fresh intelligence. And he says to them, "Well, now you go back and you scout it out. You make further preparation. Find out where David usually goes. Which route does he take to get to Tesco's down in Lydney? Tell me who's seen him there. Ask old Andrew James if he's been through the Lydney Park estate. They tell me David is very crafty." Well, there's a thing coming from Saul. "Find out about all the hiding places he uses. Come back to me with definite information. And then I will come down to you. And if he's there, well, I'm going to get him wherever he is among all the clans of Judah." And Saul is on the case. There's that kind of dramatic attention. We feel the pursuit of Saul. They went to Ziph ahead of Saul. David and his men are in the desert of Maon. Saul and his men began the search. David went down to the rock. He stayed in the desert of Maon. When Saul heard this, he went into the desert of Maon in pursuit of David. You can imagine David's desperation. You can imagine Saul's sense that this time I've got him. Her time is running out. David's 600 men are weary and they're being chased by Saul's army of thousands. And then we find there in the desert of Maon, verse 26, Saul's going along one side of the mountain. David's on the other side. But Saul's troops are spreading out. They're encircling David. They're closing in on him. It is all coming to an end. He is finished. And then messenger comes running into Saul's camp. Quick, the Philistines are coming. Come quickly. And Saul is off. And breathe. There's an irony here. Chapter 23 begins with David saving the town of Keilah from the Philistines. Chapter 23 ends with the Philistines saving David from Saul. Now, is that a chance? Is this a coincidence? Is this just one of those things? Is this a luck? Is this fate? Or is this a sovereign God who is in control of all things? A God who is in control of all things, even a Philistines. You see, I'm presenting you with a choice this morning. Here and now, this is what you need to make a decision about. Is this chance? Is this a random thing? Or is it that God is in control? And that's a big question. That's a big decision. Because a moment ago, we were praying together. Why on earth do we bother praying if events are controlled by random chance? There is absolutely no point in praying if God is not in control. Bluntly, there's no point in you telling me you're a Christian if God is not in control of things. And there wasn't much point, let's be honest, in showing up here this morning if God isn't in control of things. Because if God isn't in control of things, then he is no kind of God at all. So this morning, here's the choice you're faced with. Is David's escape just one of those things? Or is God in control, as the text says? Now, the fact that God is in control is not without its problems. Because chapter 23 follows on from chapter 22. And in chapter 22, Saul massacred the priests at the town of Nob. So I'm not saying this is a light or an easy thing. I'm not saying it comes without problems or difficulties. But I am saying you're faced with this decision. You need to settle your mind on this. Is God in control or not? And there are times when we need to kind of put our hand over our mouth and say nothing because we just don't understand. And there are times we have to say with Job, I spoke of things I didn't understand. I was speaking about things that were over my head. But we do face this decision. Is God in control? Or to ask it another way, is God God? And if God is in control then, I have to ask, is he in control now? Because if he was then and isn't now, he's again not much of a God. And if he is in control now, well, and cross your fingers, take the rabbit foot off your keyring, tear up your horoscope, stop touching wood, God is in control. That theme runs, yes, through this chapter, runs throughout the book of 1 Samuel, runs throughout scripture. God is in control. God is God. But what I want to home in on now, I want to go to a little incident. You might have missed it. You might have just barely got registered your attention. It's there in verse 16 through to 18. Let me read it for you again. David's son Jonathan went to David at Horesh and helped him to find strength in God. Don't be afraid, he said. My father Saul will not lay a hand on you. You shall be king over Israel, and I will be second you. Even my father Saul knows this. The two of them made a covenant before the Lord, and then Jonathan went home, but David remained at Horesh. Saul is chasing and chasing and chasing, and yet he can't get near. But look, who can get near to David? Who can find him? Saul's son. It's an irony, isn't it? And here's David, and he's being chased from pillar to post. He's harried, he's desperate, he's dejected. He's just had to flee from the people of Keilah, who, after he had saved them by fighting on their behalf, are then ready to give him up to Saul. And we then see Jonathan coming with this encouragement. Jonathan's encouragement sandwiched between the treachery of Keilah and the treachery of the Ziphites. And the faithfulness of Jonathan contrasts with the faithlessness of the people of Keilah and the Ziphites, people from Judah, Jonathan's own tribe. How broken David would have been by this double betrayal. I mean, could you bear it? You could just about deal with the Ziphites, or you could just about deal with the people of Keilah, but the two back to back. Surely that would have been too much for him. And so this help comes at just the right time. And isn't God in that too? He works out his plans. He uses people to fulfill his purposes. He uses Jonathan to strengthen David at just the right time. And maybe you say, well, yeah, but Jonathan was a free agent. He could have gone to David at any time. Yes. Yes, he was. And yes, he could. And yes, but this is the time that he did. Because in God's plan, in God's seeing, this is when David needed it, because God knows. God is in control. And Jonathan came, and we're told he strengthened him in the Lord. He encouraged him. It's beautiful. Wonderful thing, that, to be strengthened, encouraged in the Lord. Isn't that what you and I want? Isn't that what we wish we could be to other people? Well, three things just to see really quickly from this. Firstly, this is what you need. This is what you need. You need Jonathan. You need someone who would come alongside you and would strengthen you in the Lord. And you're carrying all kinds of burdens and all kinds of discouragements and worries and stress. And you feel perhaps as if you're walking through the wilderness. Feel as if on every hand people are betraying you. On every hand people are out to get you. You need friends who will strengthen you in God. And Jonathan does that. How does he do it? He does it by pointing to what God has done and is doing and is going to do. Don't be afraid. Saul isn't going to lay a hand on you. You're going to be king. You're going to be king because God anointed you. Because God has chosen you. You're going to be king because God is delivering you. You're going to be king because God is going to accomplish this. One of the commentators, Dale Roth Davis, says this. Jonathan's presence itself would have been a great comfort and refreshment for David. But our personal presence does not have the abiding encouragement that God's sure word does. We best encourage not by being cuddly with people. I don't know if you're cuddly with people. We best encourage not by being cuddly with people, but reminding them of the promises of God. Encouragement from God for the people of God comes from the word of God. I'm not depreciating, he says, the helpfulness of the personal touch or care. But in an age that wallows in caring and sensitivity on every hand, believers need to know that solid encouragement comes not from emotional closeness, but from God's speech. Solid encouragement comes from God's speech. He strengthened him in the Lord. You need friends who will remind you what it is that God has done for you in Jesus Christ. You need friends who are willing to point you to the way he is keeping you now in Jesus Christ. You need friends who will remind you what it is that is in store for you with Jesus Christ. Friends who will talk to you about him. Maybe they'll read the Bible with you. They'll pray with you. Now, do you have a friend like that? Who will do that for you? Do you have friends like that here in this church? You see, this is what you need. But then, this is what you must do. You then need to be like Jonathan and come alongside others. And you know them. People who are carrying all kinds of burdens and discouragement and worries and stress. And they all feel as though they are walking through a wilderness. They feel they've been opposed at every turn. They feel they've been betrayed. They feel that people are out to get them. They're conscious of that sense of abandonment. They need a friend who will strengthen them in God. And you can do that. You can do that by pointing them to what God has done and what he's doing. You say, well, what do I say? How do I do that? Well, you point them to what God has done for them in Jesus Christ. You point them to the way he's keeping them now in Jesus. You remind them what's in store for them with Jesus Christ. We're told in several places in the New Testament to encourage one another, to bear each other's burdens. Well, here's how. Come alongside people. Come alongside them and speak God's words to them. Point them to Jesus. Point them to his work. Talk about Jesus. Pray with these people. Now, are you doing that? Are you doing that with each other here? What a difference it would make in our life as a church together if we were each doing that. But you know what? Not only would it transform our relationships within the church, it would also transform our impact on the people around us. Now, why do I say that? Because if you don't feel able to talk about Jesus, you don't feel able to pray with your friends, people you've known for years, those who love him and follow him, how will you ever feel able to speak about him to your neighbour, or your work colleague, or your family member, those who don't believe? You say, well, Matt, I'm not that kind of person. I'm quite a private person. I'm afraid at this point your personality has to be put to one side in a certain measure in exchange for obedience. Because God calls you to encourage one another. And I know that will look different. And I know some people will be naturally more effusive and naturally more outgoing, and others are much more reserved. Yes, I appreciate that. I know it will look different. But it is what we are called to do. You can pray for your friends. You can pray with your friends. You can speak to them about Jesus and what he has done. Who is it that you are going to strengthen in the Lord? Are you that kind of friend to people here in this church? The end of this week, who will be rejoicing because of the way that you have strengthened them? Well, that's what you must do. We've said it's what you need. We've said it's what you must do. But the third thing I want us to see is this. Jonathan isn't enough. Jonathan isn't enough. You see, Jonathan didn't strengthen David on his own. We're told Jonathan strengthened David in God. Because all the Jonathans of this world eventually run out. At the end of this passage, we're told Jonathan went home. David remained at Horesh. This is the last time they would ever meet. That's not a criticism of Jonathan, that's just an obvious statement. There are limits to human friendship. In 8 chapters' time, Jonathan would be dead. Jonathan is not enough. But the Bible tells us about a friend that sticks closer than a brother. The best of friends. Paul, when he's writing to Timothy, it's in 2 Timothy in chapter 4, says, at my first offence, so when he was there, his first defence there in Rome, no one came to my support, but everyone deserted me. But the Lord stood at my side and gave me strength. When everyone else had fled, there's this faithful friend who will never desert you. His name is Jesus. When everybody else lets you down, when everybody else reaches the end, the limits of their human frailty, when, like Jonathan, that we're parted forever in this world, we're never parted from Jesus if he is your friend. He is a friend who will never desert you. In John 15, Jesus himself says this, greater love has nobody than this, than a man lay down his life for his friends. Here's the man who laid down his life for his friends. Jesus, the one who showed that he was the best possible friend. The man who's described as being a friend of sinners. In other words, a friend of people like you and me. Yeah, you need Jonathans. You need friends like that. You need to be Jonathan. But Jonathan isn't enough. You need Jesus to be your friend. Let me ask you, is he your friend?